Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
Two of Australia's leading MVPs, presenters, bloggers, and all-round Microsoft tech nerds. Robert Crane. He's an Office 365 MVP and the director of CIA Ops. Mark Keane. He's a Microsoft Azure MVP and an Azure / PowerShell Premier. Not anymore. I'm off work for an undisclosed period of time until I start my full-time role with Microsoft, at which point I'll no longer be an MVP. All the latest Microsoft cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. And brought to you by Ingram Micro Cloud. Streamline the provisioning, billing, and management of your clients' popular cloud business applications, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, Skykick, and more with the Ingram Micro Cloud Marketplace and Cloud Store. Get started now with Azure with the Ingram Micro Easy Azure program at www.ingrammicrocloud.com.au/Microsoft-Azure. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
You're listening to the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and on the other side of the microphone is my co-host, Mark Keane. Mark, welcome.
Hey, Rob, how are you?
Not too bad. What's happening in Mark's world?
In Mark's world, I'm still in limbo land at the moment. So I've still got that period of time where I wouldn't say doing nothing. It's more so preparing for my next challenge, my next opportunity, my next career, and running through a whole bunch of Azure technologies, the stuff that I'd never got time to do before. So we're talking about Azure Functions. I've sort of gotten the grips of that with the PowerShell aspect of it. Azure Search, dived into that. Look at the Bing APIs. We'll look at that soon on this podcast because there's a news article on that. And also, too, there's the Azure File Sync as well, which we'll talk about later on this podcast, Rob, which I've been looking at for a friend of mine. And I know you've been looking at it as well. And that Azure File Sync is what was announced currently in preview at Ignite just a couple of weeks ago. So we've both set that up, and we'll dive into that, Rob, later on in this podcast, I reckon.
And we talked about it on the last episode, didn't we, after somebody discovered it?
We did. I reckon it's a pretty cool little
I reckon it is
product.
Too. So we'll talk about that in more detail. So again, you're not practicing dancing under a stick. So limbo means something different in the land of the living over here, does it?
Well, yeah, it's more like in a holding period, a waiting cell. Hey, what are you up to at the moment?
At the moment, I'm travelling around. I've done some keynote speaking for Ingram, one of our fine sponsors, at a couple of their events in Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane, talking about the end of the domain controller. So the need no longer for a domain controller on-prem, and how the new Microsoft 365 is for business anyway, specifically focused at not having a domain controller. So it's a bit of a change of the guard for a lot of people. And
I guess it doesn't really affect Ingram Micro because most people would set up domain controllers in the cloud anyway, or virtual.
Well, not really. I think
shipping physical devices.
The key part of my discussion was around the fact that most people are probably installing domain controllers by default. They just run it up automatically, and that these days is probably not the best solution. You may need to have a bit of a think about it and think, okay, is Azure AD alone a better option? If Azure AD is alone, then do we need domain services? What else do we need in Intune desired state configuration to replace group policy? So again, the idea here is just saying, look, there's all these other new wonderful technologies that combined will probably replace the domain controller in total, and they're going to give you a lot more flexibility going forward. So that was sort of the gist of it.
So Rob, with that, we'll talk about this, I guess, later when we dive into Azure File Sync, but a friend of mine who recently rebuilt his network, I pretty much did exactly that. We had a decision point, whether we build a domain controller or not. And I said, well, not really, because he's only like 6 or 7 staff. and one office, and it's not really any point. And then using Azure AD, and so we didn't use it domain controller. But we'll dive into that, I guess, later on. It'll be a good discussion point because using Azure AD to its fullest, and I'll be keen to hear your ideas, Rob.
Yeah, look, I think at the end of the day, it's not going to replace it overnight. But again, if you're looking to get the maximum going forward and future-proof yourself, and also save some cost, I think the Azure AD Direct is the best option. There are some limitations, obviously, but things like Autopilot with Windows 10, Microsoft 365 coming out is beginning to signal, I suppose, a deprecation of the domain controller. And again, I think the main point is if you're doing domain controllers regularly, just stop and think and say, look, you know, is this the best way to approach it? And if you're typically in a Windows 10, a total Windows 10 environment, probably not. So yeah, lots to discuss there, but that's certainly something that's becoming more and more prevalent, and I think more and more businesses will adopt it as well.
Okay, so we have to also think, Rob, did you think them when you were out and about traveling the country with Ingram Micro Cloud? Did you thank them for being a sponsor on our podcast?
Always thank them.
Because if not, we can do it right now.
Well, we probably... How about we do it now? Because I'm sure they'd rather have you thank them than me.
All right. Hey, Ingram Micro Cloud. Thanks for sponsoring our podcast. And we also have to thank Rode Microphones, because without them, Rob, who is not in his hometown in Australia currently at the moment, he's currently using a Rode mic on the road.
That's correct.
Excuse that pun.
That's correct. I'm in another country called Queensland at the moment, which is on a completely different time zone, thanks to some political wrangling. But let's not get into that.
But it doesn't look like Queensland yet, I'm hearing. It looks like Melbourne at the moment.
Correct, but...
Not bagging out Melbourne. Melbourne is a nice place. It's just,
you're on thin ice anyway, as it is, my friend, so I think you better stick to the Azure news. So what Azure news have you got for us?
All right, Azure SQL Managed Instance. So instance-level functionality or isolation requirements where customers who have made deep investments in instance-level SQL Server capabilities, e.g. SQL CLR integration, SQL Server agent, cross-database querying, etc., expect similar capabilities in Azure SQL Database. Now there's a private preview of a new deployment option for Azure SQL Database called Managed Instance. So Managed Instance offers near 100% SQL Server capability with benefits of PaaS, Platform as a Service. This includes features like SQL CLR, SQL Server Agent, and cross-database querying. Microsoft have also announced a new database migration service to make the migration to Managed Instance automated, risk-free, and with downtime measured in minutes. The database migration service streamlines moving SQL Server and non-Microsoft database systems such as Oracle and other databases to Azure SQL Database. Not only will you be able to make the use of Azure SQL Server's endpoints, having Azure SQL directly on your VNet, which is another announcement happened last week, so you can also have now controlled updates where you can run a test environment. It'll receive continuous service updates. Then after validation, you will be able to apply the updates in a scheduled manner to a production managed instance environment. So yeah, that's good news. More information in the show notes on that one and in my blog. The other one I've got here is, and we'll talk about this deeper later in detail, because both Rob and myself have got real life and real world experience with this. Azure File Share Snapshots Public Preview. Now, we did announce on the last episode, Rob, you might remember, the Azure File Sync came out, but now this is the Azure File Share Snapshots Public Preview. So as you know, Azure Files uses SMB3 with encryption and is a perfect place to dump heaps of stuff. Just whatever you want, just dump it there. Now, Azure Files have been snapshotting. Azure Files have been snapshotting available to periodically store read-only versions of files, and also allows you to copy an older version of your content from anywhere for further modification and use. So basically, when your snapshot is created, the contents of the file share and the share snapshot are exactly the same. However, only the incremental changes are written to the snapshot. It makes the snapshot creation much, much faster. Like you can do literally, I tried it just yesterday. You can do up to like over 14,000 files in like this space of seconds, pretty much. And also too, it just means it's space efficient because it's only incremental changes. And also too, you're going to be saving a bit of money because it's very cost effective having only the incremental increments there only.
I think one of the big advantages of the Azure File Sync is obviously the fact that it's in Azure and it can now take advantages of services like backup and all that sort of stuff. So again, I think that it's probably a little bit immature at the moment. We'll talk about that in depth, but I think the big takeaway is, again, this example of the backup, how it's able to utilize the other features that are inside Azure to make it even more powerful. So yeah, really great service.
Yeah, we'll dive into it like straight after the news, I reckon, because as I said, like we've both, Rob, you and I have both had experience just recently in setting it up, and it's a pretty cool offering, and I'm seeing quite a bit of interest on Twitter, on social media in relation to it. So we'll go into that deeper.
All right. So why don't I do a couple of quick Office 365 points, then we can come back to more Azure goodness, which I'm sure that you have. So for those of you who use Sway now has the ability to do print and export. So these are two of the most commonly asked for features, thanks to User Voice. So now you can take a Sway. So what's a Sway? In simple terms, I suppose it's a simplified version of PowerPoint. Basically, you just throw the content into the Sway and it will auto-arrange, auto-format, and again, make sure the fonts and the pages are laid out appropriately. Really good for quick presentations, really good for kids' projects and things like that. So again, Nick can now print and export a Sway, which is a really handy thing. And if you haven't used Sway, I'd certainly recommend that you do have a look at it because it serves a very handy little publishing function. There's also some policy tips for SharePoint Online and OneDrive for business at the time of sharing. So we know people love to share information, especially out of their OneDrive and maybe out of a team site. And now what you can do is you can give them policy tips around the way they share, who they share with. So when they go to share, you can actually inject some compliance warnings around that to make sure that your users are doing the right thing when it comes to the information they are sharing. The other one quickly is that, Mark, you may be aware that Office 365 has something called Secure Score. So the idea is it does an evaluation of the security of your tenant, gives you a rating, and then lets you know what you can do to improve that. So in the same vein, Microsoft basically is bringing out a new usage score concept based on Secure Score. So what it will do, it will tell you your adoption of Office 365 across the environment, give you a rating, and you're able to obviously take some steps and use the tips that they provide to up that score to get more people using your Office 365 in total. The other thing I understand that they're going to do is also allow you to compare your usage score with other people in other tenants, so you'll get an idea of what other people like you and what their current adoption score is. So a single simple figure for security and both adoption in Office 365, I think that's certainly going to be very beneficial.
What's yours, Rob?
That Secure, the usage score hasn't come out yet, so I'm using the Power BI plugin. That's also going GA in the new year. So basically what it does, it reaches into Office 365, pulls out the usage and adoption figures, and then basically presents them in a Power BI dashboard for Exchange, SharePoint. They're also now going to roll Teams in there as well. That's probably a bit more detailed than most people need. It's great for the sort of stuff that I do, but simply to have a single number that you can then start moving up the charts to make sure that more people in your tenant are using the Office 365 feature is a great idea, but as yet I haven't seen it come to my tenant.
Okay. All right. Well, back on the Azure stuff, and this is looking at other services that have been out for quite some time. So Bing Search API version 7 and Bing Custom Search are now generally available. So what is Bing Custom Search? It lets you create highly customized and targeted web search experience to deliver more relevant results from your targeted web search, web space through a commercial grade service, which we all know it's definitely in the market and it's been around for quite some time, and it's definitely well and truly up there, and it's giving Google definitely a run for its money. Let me tell you. Also, too, the Bing Search API's version 7 allows you to bring the immense knowledge of the planet to your applications. Results come back fast with improved performance for queries on the Bing Web Search API. So more info of that on my blog and in the show notes. The other one here is Azure Log Analytics. Workspace upgrades are in progress. You might have noticed if you've got a OMS workspace or log analytics, you probably, when you log into it on the dashboard or the workspace, there's a little notification at the top saying, Thousands of others have made the change, have upgraded their workspace to the new workspace, new log analytics platform. You too should do it right now. It's like, and you can actually roll back, which I did, but Microsoft are rolling out these new enhancements and changes for log analytics with a new improved query language. So why the new query language? Why is this all happening? Because let's face it, when you make a change, like I did, Rob, about a week ago, I upgraded and things broke because I didn't really read the details. I just like read the message at the top saying,
so you did the normal
thousands
the normal
of other people
thing and didn't read the instructions.
The blurb said thousands of other people have made the switch and there's been no issues. I mean, look, I didn't lose any data, but let me just go through. So the new query language, what is it and why? It's easy to understand and it's similar to SQL. It has more extensive piping capabilities than the legacy query language. It supports more advanced runtime calculated fields, provides more advanced joins, has more advanced date time functions, has advanced algorithms to evaluate patterns and data sets and compare different sets of data. Analysis features not available in the log analytics portal, including multi-line editing of queries, additional visualizations, and advanced diagnostics. And the advanced analytics portal is just much, much better to use. And unless if you use it, Robert, if you log into it, the look and feel, I must say, is a big improvement. So, okay, changes after the upgrade. So the biggest change I have noticed, because I use Log Analytics to dump a lot of data that I've collected online up to the cloud in real time, literally just runs over and over again using one of the APIs. And so that's using the Data Collector API, that's fine. But the thing that actually did broke was the opposite to that, was getting data out of OMS, which is the Log Search API and the PowerShell commandlet. So the Log Search API, which is being deprecated, it doesn't work with the new platform, and also to the PowerShell commandlet, get Azure RM operational insights search results, which is what I'm using, that also broke too. So look, data was still being pushed up to OMS, which is good. So the Data Collector API was working still as good, because I noticed when I roll back, because you can actually restore back to the old version if you like. And that's what I did to get everything up and running again and things started working. So I'm going to have to sort of roll my sleeves up and head down and bum up and update my PowerShell script, I think. So I spent a bit of time on that. All right.
Luckily, you've got some time on your hands.
Oh, yeah, luckily. But I do have to dive into the world of containers soon as well.
Oh, man, not a problem. You can do that after we finish the podcast, surely.
Oh, not a problem. Yeah, sure. Okay. Cloud Service Map for AWS and Azure. Rob, you might have seen this come through. This is awesome. This is a great tool. It's actually a PDF. But you know, like, Rob, it's good for you. It's good for me. It's good for a lot of people in the industry who have to be across both public clouds from a service perspective and what they both offer. So there is now a new cloud service map to help you quickly compare the cloud capabilities of both Azure and AWS services in all categories. Whether you're planning a multi-cloud solution with Azure at AWS or simply migrating to Azure, you're able to see the service map to quickly orient yourself with all the services and what they look like across both of the providers. And so the categories in the PDF, which is covered, is marketplace, compute, storage, networking and content delivery, database, analytics and big data, intelligence, Internet of Things, management and monitoring, mobile services, security, identity and access, developer tools and enterprise integration. It's all listed in those different categories. And each category goes down further and tells you what the AWS version is versus what the Azure version is. So if you want to have a good snapshot in a PDF, it's not War and Peace, it's quite easy to run through. It'll tell you what the differences are between the two. So that's definitely welcome. And the other one that came through overnight was the new Azure government capabilities for classified mission critical workloads. And so it was a conference that happened very, very recently. And so basically the one that happened the previous year, so Azure government, in case you don't know what it is in the US. It's currently operation at the moment. We did announce the Canberra one. It's opening next year, but the Azure government one in the US is mission critical, providing more than 7,000 federal state and local customers the exclusive highest compliance and security hybrid flexibility and commercial grade innovation they need. So a new service just announced called Azure Government Secret, as in days ago it was announced, will allow agencies with strict protocols the handling of classified information to use Azure services. At last year's Government Cloud Forum, so yeah, 12 months ago, Azure Government was the first government-only cloud to be awarded Information Impact Level 5 DoD Provisional Authorization by the Defense Information Systems Agency. Now, Microsoft have just announced expansion plans to make Azure Government Secret available to support government agency and partners who have secret classified data. So just so you're following along nicely, Impact Level 5 and Azure Government Secret are like a level on top of each other. So basically, Azure Government Secret sits on top of Impact Level 5. So not only now has Azure got the Impact Level 5 classification sorted out, they've also now rolling out the Azure Government Secret classification, which is the top level classification for government data, which is awesome news. It just means now that thanks to the enclaves, Rob, we announced in the last podcast, and it was announced at Ignite in the US, we're talking about enclaves, you know, in the new Intel chipsets, you can have a secure enclave. So they're making use of that stuff, plus artificial intelligence and everything else that Azure has to offer. And it just means now Azure has, or the government has no reason not to use Azure because it's...
So the government can keep your secrets safe, is that correct?
Well, there's a lot of government hacking going on, as you know, around the world, and some of the lesser known cabinet, a lot of it's government backed as well, the hacking that's going on at the moment, and some of the lesser known cabinet level government agencies have secret data that they'd like to keep in the country, and their budgets don't really allow them to hire the best infrastructure or security talent, which is where a cloud provider like Microsoft comes in nicely at a perfect time. So yeah, good for us.
Well, speaking of security, one of the things that SharePoint and OneDrive now provide is a multi-geo ability. So what this provides you is by running a PowerShell, you can actually shift your data between data centers. So if you have data that may be spin up in the US and the user is moving, say, to Australia, you can run a PowerShell command and shift their OneDrive, Exchange and SharePoint data to the data centers in Australia. Still rolling out in preview. I tried it on my tenant and wasn't available as yet. But again, this means that you can now move the data to a data center much closer and hopefully in the same country as the user requires. You've also now got your service level key encryption, so you can bring your own service key now to things like SharePoint and OneDrive. So that means obviously this will provide encryption of your information based on a key you provide. Now, sounds all well and good until you lose your key and then you can't get your data. So if you do choose to get down this path, remember that you're responsible for your key, and if you lose your key or there are issues, Microsoft is not going to be able to restore your data, because to them it is simply all white noise. But for those of the tin foil hat brigade who really want to provide encryption with their own key, totally independent of Microsoft, that is now rolling out.
I've got one for you. If the US government now can trust Azure with their top level classified data, well, I'm sure you can trust Azure or Microsoft with your keys and keep it in Azure Key Vault.
Well, again, I think what you're going to find is there are certain groups of people who want to basically ensure that they are the only ones who have access to the keys for their encryption. And again, Microsoft is simply providing that, and I think that's a good option. I don't think a lot of people will use it because the maintenance overhead and the risk is quite large. But again, the main thing is Microsoft has responded to the request, is making it available. So again, if you want to go down the super secret squirrel route and bring your own keys, you can certainly do that into Azure, but also into Office 365, which is really handy. You can also set up new site-level, device-level policies. So basically, you can lock team sites to certain devices if you want, which is really handy. So you could say, okay, when the salespeople are out, they can only access the externally facing sales site for information. We've also now got session timeout policies, which we can adjust. So these are timeouts on the browser. So if you're at a airport club or something and you walk away from your machine and it's open in SharePoint Online or OneDrive, you can then force that to time out much quicker than if you're sitting in front of a desktop. So again, security a very high priority and continues to be for Office 365, which is great news. Outlook's also added the most requested calendar features for iOS and Android. So again, this is a result of the user voice voting. So if you want something, make sure you go to user voice and you vote it up. So
what were the features?
So some of the things that's rolled in is Meetup. So you and I have both been to Meetup, so meetup.com, and it will now roll those calendar requests and those appointments directly into your options. It makes managing your events even easier. So basically it's going to allow you to create events that may be a day, a week, or a month, and reoccur. Again, you can also include messages when you respond to a meeting invite, so you can add more information there. You can determine whether the event is private, so again, away from the public glare. Lots and lots more features, and again, the way to do that is to make sure you go to user voice and vote up what's there or suggest something.
So there's Rob, I've got one just on that with the Outlook app on the iPhone. I'm just waiting for the new iPhone to come out. I've got the latest, the 7 one. And using Outlook on that, the only thing I have is the fact that, and I don't know if you've noticed this, Rob, but when I open up, I know an email's come through because it displays on the lock screen that an email's come through in Outlook. But when I open up Outlook, the email's not there. I've got to wait for a few seconds for Outlook to refresh. Then all the new emails come through.
Right.
So that's just, one thing I've noticed. Whereas if you use the native Mail app, you open up the Mail app and the new emails are there straight away.
But of course, that's because it caches it down and pulls it or whatever. And part of the idea here is that, again, if you're constantly pulling data, even from email, your data charges rack up pretty quickly. So basically, really, you only want to pull down or update your emails when you actually go and look at your email program, don't you? So by them running in the background, they're chewing up your data and also your processor and your battery. So I think that's probably got some of the reason why they do that. So again, I think that will obviously improve, but that's my understanding of the reason that they do that, to save power and also bandwidth. Microsoft has also released a updated version of Office for the Mac. So they've got a major version for Excel coming out. They're beginning to align these products and they look very similar. They operate very similar. So if you're a Mac person, make sure you go in and update your Office to make sure that you have the latest features. So the thing like the autosave feature that's come to Windows is available. And cool. We've got more charts. So this waterfall style chart, funnels, histograms, Pareto, all those sort of things are now coming. So they've also updated the VBA in the background for Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. So to their credit, Microsoft is giving the Macintosh environment in Office a lot more love. It's certainly beginning to get closer to par with the Windows version. So never quite will be the same, but again, it's much, much better than it has ever been. So if you're
on Mac person, that's because a lot of Microsoft people themselves are using Macs internally as well.
I wouldn't know. I think at the end of the day, Microsoft's a software company. The more software that it sells across platforms, the better it is, and that's why it will be targeting all sorts
of platforms. The new Microsoft, everything's loved.
Almost as new as when Mark ends up taking a position there. And the final thing I've got here is that Teams is adding more connectors. So connectors are a way to pull information from third-party services. So what it means is you can go out and pull things from Twitter, you can pull them from Facebook, you can pull them from RSS feeds. But the one I'll tell you here, Mark, is they've added SurveyMonkey, so it will pull information from SurveyMonkey. But let's play a bit of a game here. Tell me if you heard of any of these services. So one is called Avochatto. Have no idea what that is. Bizteria?
No.
Bonusly?
No. No.
Pronify?
No.
Delighted? The Skim I have actually heard of. Utilidex? So no. Anyway, again, it's like I haven't heard of half of these, but anyway, they've been added to Teams. So if you do use those third-party services, you can connect them to Teams. There is a full list here which we'll put in the show notes of all the connectors, and there's lots and lots and lots and lots of options there. So if you're using things like Zendesk, or if you're using things like, I said, Twitter, TripIt, you'll also find User Voice in there. So again, that will give you an update of the changes Microsoft is
looking at. Give us a scenario of where you'd add it, like you'd want to add
a connector in. Okay, so a very good example, which I wrote my blog about, was, for example, for resellers to keep up with, say, the Microsoft announcements from the Small Partner Business blog. So what I do is I take the RSS feed from the Microsoft Australia Small Business Partner blog, and I create a connector into my team. And then what happens is it feeds those announcements when they come out as a blog post into the team and basically post them there so that I can read them. Now, it gives me a central location for that information. It gives me updates. And if you had multiple employees, they would only have to look at one set of information. And finally, if you had a group of people, then they could comment, they could add additional information around that. So that's a very, I think, a very good example of an easy way to keep up to date using connectors in Teams.
Yeah, because I don't use Teams. I dare say I will when I eventually start.
I don't think you'll have an option there. So, can we talk about Azure File Sync as yet?
Go for it.
Okay, so one of the, I suppose, I would suggest things that Microsoft probably hadn't released was the ability to synchronize file from large file shares on-prem into the cloud. Now, what it has done is released a new service called Azure File Sync. And what that does is you basically put an agent on your server and you identify the location that you want to synchronize. It will then copy that information up into the SMB files area in Azure, so under storage. And then you can install that same client on another machine and it will synchronize the information between the two machines. So again, this service is in preview, so it's still early days for it, but my experience, once I got it working and resolved some issues with the Australian data center, thanks to Microsoft, it works really, really well. So what's your experience been, Mark?
Okay, so let me tell you about my immediate use case, because it's a scenario which I had just last week. And I don't know if I spoke about this on the podcast, but I had a mate of mine who is running a small business, and his data got corrupted. And so they had to rebuild his server, had a bit of time to do that. And I made use of this Azure File Sync, because he needed to keep his shares on-prem. He had a business application that he was using in the office. And so that was a fair point. So he had to use a share internally. But he also needed to make sure that that was backed up in the cloud. And so into Azure File Sync. And so that was perfect. And so I'm just in the portal now. And so what it's called is Storage Sync Services. And so it is in preview. And then what you do is you set up a Storage Sync Service. And so if I click on that, I can go into it, and then what you do is you set up what's called the sync groups, okay? And so, and the sync groups are essentially, I would say, different shares. I've related it one to one, sync group to one share, for example. You can do it other ways, but let's go into the primary share, which is, say, called head office, I've named it, so under the sync group. If we go into there, you've got two different aspects. You've got two areas. You've got, like, two endpoints. You've got a cloud endpoint, and then you've got a server endpoint. And so if I have a look at the cloud endpoint is a Azure file share, okay?
And then you have to set up beforehand.
Correct, yep, Azure file share you have to set up beforehand, and you can have it on the same storage account. And then you have a server endpoint. And the server endpoint is like just $\data, for example. It doesn't have to be, it's not a UNC
now,
path.
The important thing here to also point out to people is at the moment, the only operating systems that are supported are 2012, R2 and 2016. So you can't go back, unfortunately, to 2008 at this stage. So only two current operating systems, server systems are supported.
Yes. And also to, okay, so let me go back a step. So to get to this point where you set up a server endpoint and a cloud endpoint, when you go through the motions of, add a server endpoint, you download what's called a client, and you set that up. And the prerequisites to install the client, you need to have the Azure RM module installed, the PowerShell module installed on your
own
machine.
Okay, so let's just pause here quickly for those people who may not be familiar with that. So if you're running Server 2016, you will get PowerShell version 5 in already on the machine. You just open up the PowerShell ISE or the command prompt, and then basically what you want to do is install --module/Azure RM. Let that install all in the background, because obviously the sync client installation requires that version of PowerShell to make things happen. If you haven't got that, then again, on 2012, you obviously need to make sure that you take the appropriate steps. And we should see that the client will probably install this in the back end. Now, the other thing to note about the client is that it actually installs the IIS service. So this sync actually runs through the IIS service. So it's obviously using HTTP style traffic to do transfers.
Yeah, and so the client itself, so yeah, you have to have PowerShell version 5.1 installed and the Azure RM PowerShell module installed as a prerequisite. It'll tell you that anyway. It'll halt and say you don't have the prerequisites. So it won't let you start over and over again, and it'll give you the option to retry once you install the prerequisites. So if you're like me and just sort of download the tool, don't read the prereqs and go next, and then, oops, I don't have it, it'll tell you, it'll walk you through it, which is good. Now, so it tells you something. The client itself, the agent itself, is all running PowerShell in the background, which is good. So you go through next, you enter in your subscription details, your login details, you tell it your subscription to use, and then you go through and to select your resource group where your storage sync service is located, and then name your storage sync service, and then you go next, and then it makes a connection, and that's pretty much it. And then the rest of it's all controlled from the portal itself.
Now the other
you do that for all the server endpoints which you want to add into the service.
Correct. Now the other thing to remember here that I was told by Microsoft is that if you are setting up this in the Azure portal, which you'll need to do the cloud endpoint, make sure that you're not running the preview version of the Azure portal. Make sure you're just using portal.azure.com, not preview.portal.azure.com. It does work, but there have been some nuances around getting it to work, and that's tripped me up initially. I resolved that after having a bit of think about it. So again, just do everything in the normal production tenant when you are setting this up. Now, as Mark mentioned, you basically put the client on all the servers that you want. Then when you go into the cloud, you basically set up the cloud endpoint, and you then need to identify the directory on-prem for the server endpoints and tell it what directory to actually back up. And then, sync. And then basically once you've accepted that, you'll see that it then commences doing the synchronization. It will then let you know when it's completed and everything's in sync. Now, so basically that then has, if you've got two servers connected to a cloud endpoint, it's now copied the files to an SMB share in Azure, copy those to your second machine. Now, one of the assumptions that I made was that if I copied a file or updated a file in the SMB share, it would automatically sync back down to the server endpoints. Now, unfortunately,
sort of does.
Sorry.
Delay.
No. So if you add a file to the SMB file share directly in Azure, the guidance from Microsoft at this point in time is that they're focused on doing the server endpoint to endpoint, making sure that's as optimal. And that means that if you do put updated files in directly in the SMB share in Azure, it may take quite a while for that to sync back to on-prem. Now, that will improve, obviously, in the next release. But my expectation...
It does eventually, though.
Yeah, correct. It does eventually. But again, just beware that if you do put it directly into the SMB file share, it will take longer to sync than if you put it into a share on one of your server endpoints.
Okay, let me just define this for a second, because a bit of confusing here. Go into detail. So a server endpoint is a server itself plus a path to where the data is. Okay, now here's the thing. You can have multiple servers in as server endpoints to one sync group, but you can't have the same server with a different path, because it'll come up with an error message saying here only one server endpoint per registered server is allowed per sync group, which is, yeah. So in other words, a sync group, relate that back to a specific path. And here's something else to keep in mind is what I noticed as well is if you add another server and its path, like a blank path, into the same sync group, the data that's already in that sync group will get eventually synced back to that new server that you've added into the sync group. So it's a little bit like DFS in a way, the way that operates.
And I think that's sort of what they're aiming for. Again, it's still early days, and if you look at the roadmap, a lot of the stuff they're going to bring out is really going to make this an extremely powerful service. I expect those a lot of those features to roll out very quickly before the end of this year. So again, that's why we're sort of letting you know and suggesting you have a look at it, have a play with it, and it works really well. Another thing to remember and recommendation from Microsoft is that the share really should be on the non-OS volume, right? So non-bootable volume,
yes.
Right? So you really want to put it on, if your C is your bootable drive, then you probably want to put it on a D, E, F or whatever. So that's going to give you the maximum flexibility. And Microsoft's also got the ability to look at the space, or you can control the storage and the amount of stuff that is actually synced. And it will basically then say, look, you know, we'll only bring down the most active 20% or the most active 30%. So this is, again, another feature that they're rolling in. But again, make sure that the synchronized data that you're using is on a non-OS disk. Now, it will work on your bootable disk. I have done it on a bootable disk, the operating system disk, but there are some limitations when you do look to do the more advanced syncing. So again, good guidance is, as always, good practice is to make sure your data is in a drive that is the non-OS and non-booting volume.
Okay, a couple of things that come to mind as well is there's two things, NTFS permissions and dedupe. First one is NTFS permissions. It will actually sync and back up your NTFS permissions. I know this because, excuse me, if you've got local user accounts on a server endpoint, like attached to a path, essentially, and then you add in another server as an endpoint to that same sync group, what's going to happen is if you check out on that new server you've added in, like the next day you come in and check the permissions, you'll see just a number of like SIDs in the NTFS permissions, because the SIDs can't resolve to the other server's local user accounts, essentially. So it tells me that yes, that's true, and it says in the documentation it does back up the NTFS permissions on the local server, and so it does that, so that's good. So if you're working in like in a domain environment, that wouldn't sort of necessarily be the case where you just see SIDs, they'd resolve to what the actual account is. So the other thing is with dedupe. Now, there's a bit of the documentation sort of talks about dedupe. It's not really currently supported in a way, but it's not sort of detailed enough. And I'll tell you how I've got it set up, and it's working quite nicely. I've got dedupe set up on not the operating system level volume, but the D drive, which is where the data is. And I've got dedupe set up at the Windows Server 2016 level using storage pools and stuff like that. And so dedupe set up, and I'm saving, I think it was, what is it, 5% at the moment or something similar, but that's all set up and it's working quite nicely as a server endpoint.
Yeah, I think that, again, I think the idea here is, again, we would recommend that it's early days if you are needing to synchronize large amounts of on-prem. So again, I don't think this is not a replacement for OneDrive. This is not a replacement for SharePoint team sites. Again, it's just another option to give you that flexibility. So let's say, for example, you have a share on-prem which has large CAD files or X-rays or something that obviously you would like to get to the cloud to back up or share between servers, between locations, and it doesn't make sense to take it to a team site. It's not an Excel or a Word file, and you're not working on it every day, then this, I think, is a great option. It's only going to continue to improve. And I think the real power of it is the fact that it's able to exist in the same ecostructure as other Azure services. So we talked about the snapshotting. Azure Backup can also reach in here and back up these as well. So I think, again, looking at the service and looking at where it's going, plus the fact of how it's integrated or going to be integrated with things like Azure AD, Azure Backup, Azure Virtual Machines, all that sort of stuff, I think makes it an extremely enticing option that a lot of people should be looking at to, again, cover off their needs, but also make sure that all the information is kept within the Microsoft sphere, in the Azure sphere, it's compliant, and again, nice and easy to manage. And I would assume that it's all going to be manageable and configurable using PowerShell.
Yeah, exactly. And also too, like, I'm just looking through, Rob, with my environment for the my mate who's got it set up in his subscription, and he's got three different sync groups, and each sync group I've got a Azure Files share, which is the cloud endpoint for each sync group. And so just looking at one of the Azure Files shares here in the storage account section in the portal, if I go into it and click on the actual file service itself, and there's a button at the top that says snapshot. So I've clicked on that and go view snapshots. This is the where it really gives you the value for money. Is I've got like there's about one, two, three, five different snapshots here. One snapshot for every day by default, a snapshot of his data automatically, and that's as good as a backup. So I can click on the last snapshot here, the latest snapshot, and I can drill down in the portal just like a file system. I can dive into it bit by bit.
It's just like a normal snapshot, but I think also
and I can I can right click on the file and I can download the individual file to the computer where it is, or I can download the whole entire directory straight from the portal.
I think this gives you, if you do an on-prem environment, you would do your normal files and folder backup to a USB drive or whatever, and you'd also have snapshot technology to recover a file quickly. So again, this inbuilt ability and the ability to extend that even further with Azure Backup, again, indicates that Microsoft's thinking ahead and that they're planning and they understand how people want to make sure their data is secure. So snapshots is inbuilt, but then obviously you can also add in Azure Backup if you want to do files, if you want to do obviously backups on a more regular basis. So again, I think the important thing is again to emphasize it's still in preview and have a look at the roadmap, but some of the stuff they've got on there is extremely impressive, and I certainly expect this service to improve functionality wise very, very quickly, because I think it's a real winner, and I think a lot of people are looking for this sort of service, and Microsoft recognize that, and now they've created the base, they can just continue to build on it.
Yeah, so the other thing which I'll just quickly mention too is if I go into a like directory listing in Windows, I brought this up yesterday, I'm just doing it right now, you can do previous versions in Windows itself. And so the previous versions thing, the actual snapshots, it comes down to the operating system level. Yeah, although I haven't really got that to work just... Oh, yes, here we go. Okay. I can see it now. So I've gone into one of the Azure file shares itself in Windows. I've mapped the drive to Azure Files from the on-premises file server, and I've right-clicked on the folder, clicked on the previous versions tab, and I can see all the different snapshots within Windows. And so as a user, they can just select the file they want, for instance, and go restore, for example. Okay.
All right, well, I would suggest firstly that Mark probably needs to do a video to contain his excitement and share that with everybody so they can actually see what he's doing, which can be a bit hard for people to visualize. And the other thing, as we're wrapping up probably, is to, now where did you get all this really great information about setting it up that made it really easy for you?
Oh, yeah, I must laugh. If you ever check out Rob's blogs, they're just like, it's very simple. Oh yeah, check out this great little feature, Azure File Sync. By the way, here's a link to set it up. Here's another link, how to manage it. Here's another link. And the links are to Microsoft. But I guess it's good in a way because, Rob, you've said it before, and I'm not trying to bag you out at all, but the amount of times that images change and you've had to go through and update your blogs with all your images is probably a smart way to do it, to have just links to Azure's blog site. And I must say that they've got the details there. So I started at Rob's blog site, which led me to Microsoft's site, but I got there. So thanks, Rob.
Yeah, I think the thing is, like I said, when I initially set it up, I did have some issues around the data center and understanding how it was actually applied. And it was a bit like, okay, how's this all fit together? The notes weren't particularly, easy to follow. They certainly, the information is there. So I just put it in a nice, simple, straightforward way of setting it up to get it to working. And then obviously I'm going to add more blogs and more details, probably look at doing a video shortly on exactly setting it all up for people. So,
but you had issues setting it up yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, basically I wasn't sure. Again, it's something that's deployed from the marketplace. I was looking in the wrong place, and then we had issues with the Australian data center, which we went back to Microsoft and they resolved very quickly. So again, as I mentioned, early days for this stuff, but again, it works really, really well. And I would certainly, I'll put the link to my blog post in. I'd recommend you just read through my blog post. That'll get you started, give you the links. And if Mark can do it, anybody can do it.
Actually, I will say the only place I got stuck, and the site for Microsoft was not exactly clear either, is trying to get it set up to begin with. And so if you go to the portal, there's a big plus sign top left-hand corner. You can't miss it. You click on that, the plus sign, and you just type in the word sync. I've just done it right now. Sync, four letters, and then the top one here, Azure File Sync Preview, is what you need to go with.
Yeah, but
you can't find it any other way.
Yeah, but no, you can. It's in the marketplace. The way you do it is you add it.
No, that is a marketplace. That is a marketplace. Yeah, okay. So plus top left, that's the only way you can see.
Yeah, exactly. So that's sort of where I got hung up initially and then worked that out. But again, I put all that in the blog post, so we'll put that in the show notes. So I think that we are getting a bit close to time here. We want to be respectful of people's time. I think we need probably to round off. We'll do some more deep dive into the Azure Sync stuff, but we're both very impressed with it and recommend you have a look at it. And I think it's going to continue to grow and improve. So we'll bring you updates as that happens. And the update that they released since I wrote my blog post was the snapshot. So again, it indicates how quickly they are moving forward with this product. So it really is good. And watch out for more information on the podcast and also in our blogs about that. But as we're rounding up, Mark, is there anything else that we need to let people know?
Thanks to Rode Microphones and Ingram Micro Cloud for your help.
Excellent. All right. So how can people get in contact with you and with the show, Mark?
So Twitter is probably the best, and you can send direct messages to me, which most people do. A lot of people do. So at Mark Keen. So it's MarkKean.
Excellent. All right. You can reach me at Director CIA, obviously on the Twitter. We're also on Facebook at N2K Podcast, and there's also a Twitter account at N2K Podcast as well. We suggest that, again, please provide us feedback. Let us know what you want to hear, what you thought. We've had a lot of very positive feedback. A lot of Mark's fan base obviously seem to think that I pick on Mark, so I've been very nice to him, I thought, this episode. So please let me know that I'm on track there. But if you need to send us email, you can do that at feedback@needtoknow.cloud. And every podcast is currently available at podcast.needtoknow.cloud. But with that, I think we're pretty much done, Mark.
Yes, we pretty much are. We're pretty much coming up to the 50-minute mark. So good episode, Rob.
More exciting news in the next episode, I'm sure, for everybody. But I think probably with that, I'll let Mark sign out for this episode. How about that, Mark? Why don't you sign off?
All right. And here we go. You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keen.